doesn't change, that as God ruled in the nations of men in ancient times, God rules in the nations of men today. I want to tell a story, and you can look at this, but I'm just going to tell the story. From the fourth chapter of the book of Daniel, we studied this some time ago in our Wednesday night study in the Old Testament prophets. And this, I don't know exactly how old King Nebuchadnezzar was when this occurred, but this is a most interesting chapter. I'm going to look at all of Daniel chapter 4. I have some passages noted, but I want to just give a brief overview of Daniel chapter 4. You remember that Nebuchadnezzar was king of Babylon. And this is the only chapter in the Bible that I know of. And if someone knows another chapter, but this is the only chapter of the Bible that I know of that are the words, the entire chapter, are the words of a king who was not an Israelite. He was not a he was a pagan king over a pagan nation. And I know of no other chapter like this. And by the way, although this is in the Old Testament, the entire chapter is not in Hebrew. In the original language, the chapter is in Aramaic, which was the language that was spoken in the court of Babylon. In fact, most of the book of Daniel, not all of it, most of the book of Daniel in the original language is in the Aramaic, the language of the court of Babylon, the international language of that day. But here's a pagan king, and he's speaking to people that he says, all people, all nations, languages, and tongues need to know. And he was right. Now, he was an arrogant man. And he was arrogant enough that he probably thought anything he said, every nation, people, and tongue need to know about it. And in one sense, that was true, because if they didn't do what he said, they could kill them. He could kill them. And you know, right before this, there had been, you remember, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, or Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And he had issued the command that all would fall down to that golden image that he had erected, and they refused to. And his temper was shown in that when they refused to, he had them cast into a burning furnace of fire. And so this is the chapter right before this. Apparently he's mellowed a little bit, to the point that God can actually reveal something to him, and he can get this. One of the great, great principles of Scripture was revealed to this pagan king by the name of Nebuchadnezzar. And he said this happened to him at the very outset. He tells us why God made this known to him, that all peoples, nations, languages, and tongues should know that the Most High God rules, and he sets up over the nations the lowest of men. Now that, by the way, Nebuchadnezzar is speaking of himself. He was insulting himself when he said that. God sets up over the rulers, over the nations, the lowest of men. Now, have anybody here ever wondered how in the world? Now, I'm not saying this to say anybody's wrong politically. Is anybody here ever wonder how Donald Trump got to be president of the United States? Can you imagine, a year ago, if somebody said Donald Trump will be the next president of the most powerful country in America, most people say, you're insane. That's not going to happen. But you see, I don't know, and I'm not saying that God set Donald Trump up over, but God does have a hand in those affairs. And there's a reason the things happen the way they do. And I know, oh yes, that the Electoral College, everybody learned some things about the Electoral College this last year, didn't you? That a lot of us didn't know about before. And obviously a lot of folks who was running for office were totally ignorant of this Electoral College thing. That's all I'll say. But at any rate, who would have guessed it a year ago that Donald Trump would be the next president? And who knows what's going to happen in the future? Well, I sure don't. And a lot of people are fearful. But you know, things are in the hands of the living God. And whatever's going to transpire, God is in charge. And that's the whole point of Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 20. And that's what Nebuchadnezzar, this great pagan king, is teaching us in Daniel chapter 4. Nebuchadnezzar, while he was asleep, had a dream. Now, he did this more than once. Remember, Daniel chapter 2, he had another dream about a great image. Well, here he has a dream, and in this dream, he saw a great tree. And this tree grew so big that you could see it everywhere in the world. It grew all the way up to the heavens. It means up to the very highest point of the sky that he could imagine. And it produced all kinds of fruit, and its leaves and its limbs spread out. And all the beasts of the field came to live under that tree. And all the birds there made their nests in that tree. And the fruit of that tree fed all the people everywhere, and the animals and the birds. Everything was taken care of by that tree. And then the watchers. Now, what he means by watchers, I'm not sure. It may mean the pagan gods. It may mean the angels of God. I'm not sure. Because only in Daniel is that word used. But the watchers decreed that this tree is going to be cut off, and it's going to be stripped of its fruit and stripped of its leaves, and all the animals and the birds would get away from it. But that stump that was left of that tree is going to have a band put around it, a band of iron and bronze or brass, so that it would be preserved. And that it was going to be that way for seven times. That probably means 7 years. Until seven times had passed over it. And it's going to be wetted by the dew of heaven. And then after that 7 years. And by the way, he gives a little secret in here. Is that it said, concerning him. So he knows it applies to a man. That he's going to have the heart of a beast. And then his heart, his mind is going to return. In other words, he had the mind of a beast. But his mind's going to return to him, and his rule is going to be restored to him. It's because that tree is going to grow again, become a great tree again, and all the beasts of the field be under it again. So Nebuchadnezzar didn't know what that was talking about. So he called in the magicians, and they couldn't tell him what it meant. So finally he called in Belteshazzar. That's his name for Daniel. And he called in Daniel, and Daniel now had the title of the chief magician. Now, that's what Nebuchadnezzar called him. Daniel was not a magician. He was a prophet of God. But at any rate, Nebuchadnezzar called him in, and Nebuchadnezzar is now deferential to Daniel. He'd learned from Daniel chapter 2 that Daniel had the Spirit of God within him, and that's what Nebuchadnezzar says there in Daniel chapter 4. The Spirit of God is in you. And I know that, Daniel, you can tell me the meaning of this. And Daniel was very troubled. Now, this is just my opinion right now. I think Daniel was troubled for the same reason that those other magicians couldn't tell Nebuchadnezzar what it meant. Because the meaning is rather apparent on the face of it, but the meaning is against Nebuchadnezzar. And nobody, you know, Nebuchadnezzar killed folks just for refusing the slightest of his commands. And he had the power to kill anybody he wanted to just on a whimsy. And so it's obvious others feared him, but Daniel was troubled. Well, fine, and Nebuchadnezzar said, Daniel, don't worry about it. But Daniel said, oh, Nebuchadnezzar, may the dream and its interpretation be to your enemies. Now, that tells you it's going to be something bad, doesn't it? May it be for your enemies. He said, the great God of heaven has given you this kingdom. All nations, languages, and tongues are under your rule. And all depend on you. But you're going to be given the heart of a beast, the mind of an animal. And you're going to dwell with the animals until seven times, probably 7 years, pass over you. Till you learn. Here's the great lesson of Daniel chapter 4. One of the great lessons of the Bible. Till you learn that the Most High rules in the nations of men and gives it to whomsoever he will. Now that lesson is an eternal lesson. The Most High rules. God rules over all the nations of men and gives them to whomsoever he will. Don't ever forget that. When things look so bad, if I had hair, I'd tear it out. How can it get any worse? Never forget. God rules in the nations of men and he gives the rule to whomsoever he wills. God's in control. That's the point. Now, I'll quickly just finish this because of lack of time on Daniel chapter 4. Read the whole chapter. It's a great, great chapter. The great lesson is, and by the way, that happened to Nebuchadnezzar. And he lived out among the animals for 7 years. His rule was taken away from him. He let his hair grow to where it was like eagle's feathers. His fingernails, they were like claws. And he dwelled like an ox out in the field, eating grass with the animals, eating grass with oxen, till 7 times 7 years had passed over him. And then his mind returned to him, and he realized and he praised the God of heaven. But you know when it happened to him, if that was taken away from him? A year after Daniel had interpreted that dream to him, he was standing on the parapet of his palace looking out, and Babylon was a magnificent city, the greatest city of the ancient world. Just incredibly magnificent. And Nebuchadnezzar built that great city. And he's looking out and said, "Is this not this great Babylon which I have built to my glory?" And while the words were still in his mouth, he was given the heart of a beast, dwelt among the animals for 7 years. And when he finally, his mind returned to him, then he praised the God of heaven who rules all the nations of men and gives them to whomsoever he will. Now that also is the lesson that Habakkuk is teaching us. Habakkuk, a little 3-chapter book. It's a great, great book. We'll study it sometime. And Habakkuk lived at a time when about the time that Nebuchadnezzar came to power, and the Babylonians were sweeping down on the Israelites from the Jews, I should say, on Judah from the north. And Habakkuk was pleading with God. There was a wicked nation he lived in. And how can you allow the wicked to rule? How can God allow the wicked to rule? And God, in essence, says to Habakkuk in Habakkuk chapter 1, "Don't worry about Habakkuk. I've got everything under control. I'm going to bring in the Babylonians. They're going to destroy your nation." Well, that's really comforting. You go in prayer to God, "Lord, we live in a wicked America. Our morals are horrible. Don't worry about it. I'm going to bring the Chinese in and destroy your nation." "Well, thanks. That's what I want to hear." Well, that in essence is what the Lord told Habakkuk. And so Habakkuk pleaded to God about that. And he says, "Don't worry about it, Habakkuk. Now I have some more to say about this. I've got everything under control. Because I'm going to destroy them for their wickedness also." And Habakkuk learned some great lessons. But here's the lesson I want to see at this time Habakkuk learned. The Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth keep silence before him. What does that mean? Well, don't let me explain it. Let David explain it in Psalm 11, verse 4. The Lord is in his holy temple. The Lord's throne is in heaven. His holy temple is heaven. That's where God dwells. That's his holy temple. And God looks down on the affairs of... All right. His eyes behold, his eyelids test the sons of men. Do you think God sees what's going on in this world? Do you think God sees what's going on in America? Do you think God sees what's going on in Mountain Home, Arkansas? I believe God sees what's going on in the household of Keith Sharp. God sees, God knows, God knows all. And God's still on his throne in heaven. He hasn't abdicated his throne. He hasn't given it over to the Russians. He hasn't given it over to the Chinese. And he hasn't given it over to the Americans. God still rules on his throne. He still controls the affairs of men. And he does it for a purpose. Everything that happens in history is not accidental. It's not just going along with no purpose whatsoever. There's a purpose behind it all. And the purpose is what God is working out for his people. Now, I'll get to this later. His rule is now exercised through his son, Christ Jesus. Jesus is now Lord of lords. Do you know what that means? The word Lord means ruler. He's ruler of the rulers. That's the point. Who rules the president of the United States? Jesus Christ does. Who rules Putin in Russia? Jesus Christ does. Who rules the premier of China? Jesus Christ does. He rules the rulers. He's Lord of lords. He's King of kings. That's Revelation chapter 19, verse 15. But in Matthew chapter 28, as Jesus, and you probably can't see that very well, and I probably should have put it another way, but I like that picture. But in Matthew chapter 28, when Jesus is about to give the Great Commission, He shows the authority behind the Great Commission. Jesus came and spoke to them saying, all authority. The Old King James has the word power. And that word in the original, it's the word exousia, means both power and authority. Power is the ability to rule. Authority is the right to rule. Jesus has both. He has the right to rule, authority. He has the ability to rule, power. Jesus has it all. Where? In heaven and on earth. Jesus Christ is King of kings and Lord of lords. Jesus now is the ruler through whom God rules the world. In Ephesians chapter 1, the Apostle Paul states the same thing. Verses 22 and 23. And he put all things under his feet. He is God. His is Jesus. God put all things under Jesus' feet. There's nothing excepted from that. Everything in the universe is under the rule of Jesus, and gave him to be head over all things to the church. In addition to, or a part of, his rule of all things, he also rules the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all in all. How long will Jesus rule? In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 25 and 26, for he must reign till he has put all enemies under his feet. The last enemy that will be destroyed is death. When the general resurrection of the dead takes place, then the last enemy of Jesus will be destroyed. That's death. Then he will cease to reign. And he will turn the kingdom back to the Father, that God may be all in all. And that's all in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verses 21 through 28. And the Lord uses nations and the rulers of nations to accomplish his own will without their even knowing that he's doing it and without violating their free will. Did you hear that? Now that is the most amazing statement, but I believe that is absolutely true. God uses nations and peoples to accomplish his will. They don't know he's doing it, but he doesn't violate their free will. Now, that takes some doing, doesn't it? And I'm going to give you an example of that. I'm going to give you the example of Pharaoh. Now, look at men. God used Pharaoh in Exodus chapter 9. Moses is talking to Pharaoh. I believe this is, if I remember right, it's right after the plague of the frogs. But he's talking to Pharaoh, and he said, God, if he wanted to, he could have sent a plague and destroyed your nation. But he said, I've raised you up for this reason, that in me, my name might be glorified in all of the earth. And do you know what? A generation later, 40 years later, when Israel entered the land of Canaan, do you remember why Rahab said that the people in Jericho were trembling at the Israelites? Because they had heard 40 years later, they knew what God had done to Pharaoh in Egypt. His name was glorified even up there in the land of Canaan and all the earth. God's name was glorified because what he did, he used Pharaoh to bring glory to his name and all the earth. Now, do you think Pharaoh realized God was doing that? And do you think that Pharaoh willingly let God use him to accomplish that? You know the answer to those. But God never violated Pharaoh's free will. Pharaoh did very well what Pharaoh wanted to do. And that was the whole problem with Pharaoh, wasn't it? Nobody's going to tell him what to do. And that's the very reason God could use him in any way he wanted. Now, God hardened Pharaoh's heart. It says so in Exodus chapter 9, verse 12. God hardened Pharaoh's heart. Why? God gave him commands that he knew very well that Pharaoh was too proud to obey. God told Moses that in Exodus chapter 3, verses 18 and 19. He says, I know him. He will not obey me. He will not do what I command him to do. So God gave him commands that he knew Pharaoh well enough. Now, did Pharaoh have to disobey God? No. Pharaoh did very well what Pharaoh wanted to do. But God gave him commands he knew Pharaoh would not obey, and then brought the punishment on him that he richly deserved. And it was Pharaoh's own fault, but God used him to accomplish his will. His name was glorified in all of the earth. But Pharaoh hardened his own heart. It says so in Exodus chapter 8, verse 15. How did he harden his own heart? He refused to obey even when it was obvious that God was doing these things. You remember there's just a couple of the plagues that the magicians were able to perform. And by the way, when finally it got around to having boils on man and beast, the magicians couldn't even appear before Pharaoh because they were covered up with boils too. They couldn't do all those things that Moses and Aaron could do because God was with Moses and Aaron and Pharaoh. All he had were some magicians who were using the power of Satan in magical tricks. Pharaoh should have known. Pharaoh could have known. But Pharaoh was too proud to obey, so God used him to accomplish his will. And he still does that. He uses nations as well as men to accomplish his will. And he doesn't violate their free will. Now, in Habakkuk chapter 1, Habakkuk is talking about the Babylonians who are going to come down and to destroy the Jewish nation. And notice what he says about the Babylonians. Look among the nations. Now, this is what God is telling Habakkuk. Look among the nations and watch. Be utterly astounded. For I will work a work in your days which you would not believe though it were told you. For indeed I am raising up the Chaldeans, that's the Babylonians, a bitter and hasty nation which marches through the breadth of the earth that possess dwelling places that are not theirs. Notice God says, I'm raising them up. God raised up the Chaldeans. God raised up the Babylonians to be a bitter and hasty nation that would march out and take other places that did not belong to them. And that included Jerusalem. That included the Jews. But notice what he says concerning them. Was he just using them as robots? Was he forcing them to do things that they didn't want to do? Verse 7. They're terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity proceed from themselves. Where do they get their judgment or their justice, as the New American Standard says? It comes from themselves. It didn't come from me. God says, it's not from me. It's from themselves. They're doing what they want to do, but God is using them to accomplish his will. That's the way God does. It shows that God is both all-powerful and all-knowing. But what God does is always the right thing to do. And this is something else that is so comforting to know. When everything seems to be falling apart, as we say, when the country seems to be going to hell in a handbasket, God's still ruling, and his rule is righteous. What he does is the right thing to do, and for the right reason. Psalm 97, verses 1 and 2, the Lord reigns. Let the earth rejoice. Let the multitude of the isles be glad. Clouds and darkness surround him. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of his throne. Oh, if that could only be said about this country, that the foundation of the rule of our rulers is righteousness and justice. Always doing the right thing, always doing the fair thing. God in his rule always does the right thing. He always does the fair thing. Always. There's more conclusions I'd like to draw from that, but we don't have time. His rule has ultimately one purpose. This thrills me to know this. The ultimate and compelling reason that God rules the nations, and this has been true all the way from the beginning of time, is for the salvation of his people. You know we're important. Christians are important. We're his people. And God is ruling the nations for the purpose of bringing those people who have faith in his Son Jesus Christ to their ultimate salvation. And of bringing more people to faith in Jesus Christ by allowing his word to go forth and by allowing evil to be taken out of the way. The just shall live by faith is one of the great principles of the book of Habakkuk. Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 4. Behold the proud. That's probably talking about the Babylonians. Could be talking about the proud of the nation of Judah. It may be both. His soul is not upright in him. But, here's one of the great principles of Scripture. It's quoted 3 times in the New Testament. But the just shall live by his faith. That person is just. That person doing right. is going to live by means of his faith. Now, that's the Old Testament statement. That quotation is taken three different times in the New Testament. And each time, this makes a great series of lessons, each time is given a different application. The first application is the only one we'll have time to look at. In Romans chapter 1, that quotation, the just shall live by his faith. And by the way, the living there is not physically living, it's spiritually living. That quotation, the just shall live by his faith, is the theme of the book of Romans. The greatest treatise ever written on the divine plan of salvation is based on that simple little quote from Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 4, the just shall live by his faith. You know the passage, I hope you do, Romans chapter 1, verses 16 and 17. This is the theme of the book of Romans. For I am not ashamed of the gospel of Christ, for it is the power of God to salvation for everyone who believes, for the Jew first and also for the Greek. For in it, that is in the gospel, in it the righteousness of God is revealed. God's plan for all mankind to be righteous is revealed in the gospel. As it is written, the just shall live by faith. And here the application is, those justified by faith are the ones who will have just a little bit of a change from the Old Testament application. If you're justified by faith, you're the ones who will live. God's ruling for the purpose of the salvation. There's another great principle, and that is that evil carries within itself the seeds of its own destruction. That's the way God has set up this world. God has so set up the nature of the operation of this world that those who practice evil, regardless of how powerful they become, are doing so to their own ultimate destruction. In Habakkuk chapter 2, verse 8, because this is speaking to the Babylonians, because you have plundered many nations, all the remnant of the people shall plunder you, because of men's blood and the violence of the land and the city and all who dwell in it. When people practice evil, they have within their own practice the seeds to their own destruction. I've done quite a bit of reading. Most of you who know me know that I'm hysterical. I'm a history buff. And I enjoy reading about history. And it's fascinating to me to read the stories about the history of World War II. And do you know, at the beginning of the war, it looked like there's nothing that could check the juggernaut of the power of Hitler. He looked like he was holding all the cards. He made some great mistakes. But even into 1944, from the standpoint, even to the D-Day, D-Day could have gone either way. It could have been an abject. You know that Eisenhower had a letter written, a lot of you know this, had a letter written. If D-Day failed, he would hand it and take all the blame and would step down as commander-in-chief of the Allied forces. He didn't know whether it was going to work or not. One of the greatest days in history as far as military history was D-Day. But it could have gone either way. And so many things, nobody had any control over it. It was in the hands of God. And that's the way it always is. Ultimately, it's in the hands of God. But all those evil things that the Nazis were doing contained within itself the seeds of their own destruction. All those evil things that the communists were doing in Russia carried within itself the seeds of their own destruction. Let me tell you something else. All the immorality that is being openly practiced and pushed by the government in our nation today carries within it the seeds of the destruction of this nation. Evil carries within it the seeds of its own destruction, because that's the way God rules the world. Man has nothing to do with it. It's God being in control. But God's ultimate purpose is the salvation of his faithful remnant. In all the affairs of men, all the way from the Garden of Eden on down, the way God rules is so that people who come to saving faith in him will ultimately be brought to salvation. Habakkuk chapter 3 is one of the great statements of faith of the Bible. Habakkuk stating what he's learned from these things that God's talked to him about. And he says to the Lord, as he's praising the Lord in Habakkuk chapter 3, verse 13, you went forth. Notice, why did God do what he did? Why did he allow the Chaldeans to destroy the Jews? Why did he allow other nations to destroy the Chaldeans? Why is God doing these things? You went forth for the salvation of your people, for salvation with your anointed, your Messiah, your anointed. You struck the head from the house of the wicked by laying bare from the foundation of the neck. God went forth for the salvation of people. One last point, and the lesson's yours. And I don't have time to go to Genesis 18. I'll let you read it on your own. But I do want to get Habakkuk 3, 17 through 19. This is the very, Habakkuk drawing his book to an end. Habakkuk, what have you learned from the fact that what God's telling you what he's going to do? What have you learned from this? Well, he's learned a great lesson that all of us need to learn. Though the fig tree may not blossom, nor fruit be on the vines, though the labor of the olive may fail, and the fields yield no food, though the flock may be cut off from the fold, and there be no herd in the stalls. You know what he's saying? If everything is gone, if I have absolutely nothing whatsoever left, no way to eat my food, no roof over my head, all is lost, all is gone, I have absolutely nothing, what will be my attitude? Yet I will rejoice in the Lord. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Lord God is my strength. He will make my feet like deer's feet. Joe, we can hardly even walk. He will make my feet like deer's feet. And he will make me walk on my high hills. Through God, his people will be victorious, and we will receive a home in heaven. That's the reason that God rules the affairs of men. That's the whole point of his rule, that we can be brought to ultimate salvation through obedient faith in Jesus Christ. Let's turn to number 344. If you haven't made your life right with Christ, now's an opportune time to do that. We invite you to come while we stand and while we sing. Who at my door is standing?